Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, where myself, Kriva, and my friend MJ talk about Journey to the West. So, we had a bit of a dramatic last chapter. Sun Wukong has been banished. He has been sent away by his master Tripitaka. He is no longer Pilgrim Sun. He is just Sun Wukong again.
Yep, bad breakup. Gotta look at the fallout.
And when we last left him, he was sobbing by himself over the Great Eastern Ocean.
Aww.
And once he's composed himself a bit, he heads the rest of the way back to the Flower Fruit Mountain, where he was born. But it's not as he remembers it at all. For one, there's no flowers and no fruit.
Oh, so it's just mountain.
It's just mountain now. It's just the mountain. The trees are all withered, cliff faces have collapsed, the place is generally in total shit, and there's not a sign of anything alive at all.
Whoa. You turn your back for a couple of centuries. Actually close on a millennia now, is it? Or
no, it's only 500 odd years. Like he was under the mountain for 500 years. The pilgrimage has only been going on for a year or two.
Yeah, you just can't turn your back for half a millennia anymore without everything going to shit.
So he's quite grief-stricken and he composes a lament. Which, again, I'm not going to bother reading, but there's a very sad poem.
Aww.
But there is still survivors on the mountain. It's not completely dead. 7 or 8 small monkeys hear his recital and come out from where they've been hiding in the tall grass. They greet him as father, and they ask him what happened. They're still the same monkeys, by the way, because, like, if you recall, in Chapter 3, he made them all immortal.
Yeah, this is when he asked to speak to Death's manager.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay, I remember.
So after Erlang, if you remember him, captured Sun Wukong, he came back and burnt the entire mountain to the ground, which killed more than half of the monkeys there. So after that, the ones that survived had trouble gathering enough food to get by, and half of them again just left. And then for the last couple of years, hunters have been coming to the mountain and hunting the ones that are left.
Oh god.
So... Oh yeah, fuck, I forgot. I did the thing again where I gave you the content warnings directly and then I forgot to give them again when I hit record. By the way, this episode is going to feature animal death and human death and cannibalism.
Woo! So, oh god, cannibalism.
So here's some of the animal death. The hunters do kill and eat a lot of the monkeys. The ones that are captured are taught to do tricks and made into street performers.
Oh no. Oh, that's upsetting.
Yeah, so do you remember how many monkeys the Monkey King commanded all the way back in Chapter 3?
I will be honest with you, Kriva, I do not.
It was... Do you want to guess?
I would say 1,000.
No, that's how many that are left now, actually.
Oh, okay.
There were 47,000.
Fuck me. That is a lot of monkeys.
Yeah, and 46,000 of them are gone.
Oh, Jesus.
So, the four lieutenants that Wukong had, Ma, Liu, Peng, and Ba, are still around, and they're still in charge.
Well, they fucked up, didn't they?
Because a god burnt down the entire mountain? Like, I don't think they could have done much to stop it.
Well, I mean, they could have stopped the hunters and the slavery that's apparently going on, and the...
They're monkeys!
I mean, they're immortal monkeys that are apparently sentient and have a lot of... Yeah, never mind. Okay. I feel like this should also... This may also be on... Sun Wukong himself for not leaving them equipped. So
I think, well, I mean, also for, like, bringing down the wrath of the gods on them in the first place.
I mean, this is true, yeah.
But, yeah, Wukong goes to meet the four of them back in the Water Curtain Cave, and they ask why he's here, because they have heard that he'd been freed, but they knew that he was meant to be on a pilgrimage now. So Wukong goes on a small rant about Tripitaka not being able to tell the difference between who is worthy and who is foolish, and he shows them the letter of banishment that Tripitaka wrote. And the monkeys are all actually delighted at this. They all cheer and laugh that their king has been left off the hook, and he's free now, and they decide to have a big party.
I mean, it's something.
Wukong actually tells them no, he wants to try and sort out the business with the hunters first, and he asks them how often the hunters come. They come apparently every day, but there's no telling what time they might arrive at, and they haven't shown up today yet.
Okay, they're about to get their ass handed to them.
So, yeah, the Monkey King decides he's going to do something about defending his kingdom. He orders all the monkeys to gather up rocks and pile them up for him. And he tells them to all go hide in the cave. So Wukong heads to the peak of the mountain and has a look around, and he spots the hunters approaching. There's about 1,000 of them. They're dressed in fox skins and silks, and they're armed with bows, forks for catching rabbits, dragnets, lassos, and poles covered with birdlime. Birdlime is like, it's a glue that you stick on a branch or pole that birds get stuck on if they try and land in it and can't fly away again.
Okay.
Little.
Yeah, cruel, yeah. Little cruel, but not. I mean,
there's far worse. There's far crueler ways of catching animals, but yeah.
This is true.
And as well as that, as well as riding in on horses, they also have hounds, hawks, and eagles with them for the hunt. So Wukong takes a huge breath and summons a wind that hails all of the rocks that his monkeys gathered down on top of them. They don't live through this.
Yeah.
He just kills all of them. Yeah.
That was quick.
They did not stand a single chance.
No, I mean, the monkey is a portable army.
He didn't even need to use it.
Yeah, it's just like, you're gone, you're fucked. This does sort of feel like an ambush that the monkeys could have pulled themselves, though. I'm not trying to victim blame.
They don't have the ability to summon hurricanes.
Okay, yeah, true. But I mean, they could have just gotten, like, some very large rocks.
I feel like, monkeys are not very big.
Depends on the monkey. I am victim blaming the monkeys here, I do realize. I apologize. I'm sorry.
Even Sun Wukong himself is only like 4 foot tall.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Monkeys aren't that big or strong. Like, it's not like they're gorillas.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm not entirely, up on my primate classification, but, okay, fair. Anyway, I apologize for victim blaming the monkeys. That was unfair of me. And I'm glad the hunters are dead, so.
Yeah, so Wukong makes a comment to himself about how much of a big deal Tripitaka made about him killing a few monsters when he could do this to 1,000 men without breaking a sweat.
Bloodthirsty.
Little bit. So he tells his monkeys to go and loot the hunters. They can use the clothes to keep warm. They can take the weapons and use them to defend themselves in future. And they can use the horses for meat and leather. And he tells them to just dump all the human bodies in a lake and to gather up all of the banners and bring them directly to him. So
take their collars.
Wukong patches all the banners together into one huge sign on which he writes, "The Flower Fruit Mountain rebuilt, the Water Curtain Cave restored, the Great Sage equal to heaven."
Now, how aware is Heaven that they've had this breakup? Because I can't imagine them being too pleased once they find out.
I mean, it's only just happened.
Okay.
Guanyin might know. She knows fucking everything.
Yeah. She is terrifying.
But otherwise, you know, they don't know. They won't know until someone tells them about it. And so far, all the witnesses are dead.
Fair enough.
although, actually, I suppose they haven't come up in a very long time, but I guess there is, like, the invisible guardian spirits that are also, like, following Tripitaka that very rarely come up.
Oh, shit, they I forgot about them.
They might report, actually.
Are they giving, like, daily updates? It's a little concerning with... I was going to say it's a little concerning about privacy, and then I remembered your man literally has a headband that can be tightened. And yeah, never mind.
Yeah, that is irremovable. So anyway, Wukong also calls up the four Dragon Kings to borrow some divine water, which he pours over the mountain to heal the land and makes the plants green again. And he plants elms, willows, pines, cedars, and peach, pear, date, and plum trees. So he's doing a bit of rewilding.
Yeah. That's retiring, getting into gardening.
So, and then the book says the word monk was never mentioned again. It doesn't explicitly say that that's because Wukong forbade it, but I think it's safe to assume that if he didn't explicitly forbid it, then the other monkeys at least pretty quickly realized that it was a very bad idea to mention it.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a bit of cop on.
So, meanwhile, back on the road, Zhu Baji now leads the way, with Xia Wu Jing pulling the luggage in the back. And the remaining pilgrims come to a thick pine forest overgrown with vines and creepers. Tripitaka is worried it might be dangerous, but Baji uses his rake to tear a path through the trees for them. After a while, Tripitaka is getting very hungry, and he asks Baji to go get some food while he rests. So Baji is taking up all of Wukong's duties, including finding food to beg.
I'm sure he's doing stellar at it.
Yeah, he walks for about 10 miles before he just gets tired and decides to have a rest instead.
He's not exactly the best and brightest.
So he thinks if he goes back so soon, Tripitaka won't believe that he already like searched for 10 miles. So he decides to lie down and rest for an hour before heading back. But as soon as he rests his head on the ground, he immediately falls asleep.
It's relatable.
So eventually Tripitaka starts worrying about what happened, and Xia Wu Jing thinks that he probably found a house and decided to stay there and fill his own stomach before heading back. Tripitaka thinks that Wu Jing is probably right, but he's worried about how late it's going to get before Baji comes back, and they don't have anywhere to stay for the night either. So Wu Jing decides to head off and try and find Baji and drag him back. Tripitaka, sitting alone in the forest, other than the horse, starts nodding off, and he decides to go for a walk just to keep himself awake. And he heads west to try and follow the path that Baji and Wu Jing took, just in case, you know, they're on their way back, he might run into them on the road. But he basically immediately gets lost and ends up heading south, and he actually accidentally walks out of the forest.
It's not exactly the brain trust, is it?
No, it's not going well.
No. I'm sure everything goes swimmingly after this, though, right?
Yeah.
This is an aberration.
As soon as he's out of the trees, he sees in front of him a huge, golden, glowing, bejeweled pagoda. And he reckons it must be an extremely holy temple, and he derides Baji for somehow missing this. So there's a poem describing it that's interesting. It describes it in loving detail, how beautiful it is, how majestic it is, etc., etc., on and on. And then in the last two lines, it suddenly says, "This region quite clearly was an evil place." Or sort of. So Anthony Yu's translation actually says this region nonetheless was an evil place, but then there's a footnote explaining that the word he translated as nonetheless should actually normally be quite clearly. But that's such a non sequitur that he found it, he felt the need to like amend the poem. Which I don't know, like that, it, that kind of non sequitur is out of place with like the rest of the poetry and the rest of how things are told, in this general style of the rest of the book, So maybe it was a mistake or some kind of typographical error. But
medieval typo, maybe, but it is also clearly fucking evil.
Yeah, but I do really like it as an effect, as just this loving description of how beautiful and holy this place is, and then just suddenly, clearly, this place is evil. So as someone who has absolutely no expertise when it comes to translation, Chinese poetry, the literary traditions of this novel, or anything at all that could possibly be relevant, I think he should have left the non sequitur in.
I agree. As also that. If anyone disagrees and can tell us why, please let us know.
Yeah.
Because also, you know, I like to think that it plays in, I like to think it's with the assumption that the audience is a little bit genre savvy at this place and at this point knows that if big random fuck off beautiful temples appear where they're not really supposed to be, they're probably evil.
Yeah, and I mean it that's true, and it could be that kind of like exactly like a knowing nod to the audience that like, well, we're this far into the chapter, clearly he's about to get kidnapped again.
Yeah, I would like to think of it that way, to be honest.
So Tripitaka lets himself in, but when he steps inside and pulls back the curtain, he, surprise, surprise, sees a huge monster asleep on a stone couch. The monster has an indigo face, long white fangs, a nose like a parrot's beak, and a deep purple beard. His name...
It's a real looker.
Yeah, his name is Yellow Robe. It's not that far off the description of Xia Wu Jing, to be honest.
This is true.
He also had like an indigo face and red hair rather than purple, but
maybe they know each other. Also, however, what, his name is Yellow Rope?
Robe, like clothing.
Robe. Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. It was like, oh, fucker's purple, but you know, yellow and purple. Yeah, he deserves to die.
Harsh.
I'm just saying.
MJ.
It depends on the color of the parrot beak, really.
MJ hates the non-binary flag.
The non-binary flag doesn't have yellow in it.
I thought it did. Am I getting them mixed up with a different one?
Possibly. Non-binary flag. I thought it was just purple and green. I hate to say it, but we may have too many flags. You are correct. It is yellow, white, purple, and black. Yeah, I tend to use the gender fluid flag, which is white, purple, and green. But yeah, no, I apologize on behalf of all. I apologize to all non-binary people and also to all flags. As a non-binary person, I am pro non-binary people and pro flag. Although the best flags do have dragons on them. I've got a massive fuck off pride flag with a Welsh dragon on it that I got in Cardiff. So
yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
Makes a good cape.
It does. It makes an excellent cape. But yeah. So I've just after post shaming my entire gender, or like one of them, I don't know. There's a couple. Who knows? It's really just throwing darts at a board at this stage. It's more like if I had my own personal gender flag, it would just be the shrug emoji on a white black ground and
a dragon
and a dragon. Yes. But the dragon would be kind of tastefully placed up at the top right, and the shrug emoji would be just in the center.
I think we've got the our cover for our next for the cover art for this episode. No more Wikimedia Commons pulling of like ancient Chinese art. Just that.
We no longer talk about Journey to the West. This is now just a queer vexillology podcast. What's your favorite flag, Quiva? It is vexillology, isn't it?
Flag? It definitely starts with VEX. That's as committal as I'll get on the matter. I don't know. Flags.
It is the study of flags.
I can take or leave flags.
Ooh.
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not.
So you don't have a favorite?
You know, it's not one you could really fly due to historical reasons and you being used by particular groups, but
Oh no.
I like the Starry Plough banner.
Oh yeah. Fair. Very fair.
You know, it's settled the argument of you know, for a socialist banner, should you use star, you know, should you go the way of using stars and abstract imagery, or should you show the tools of the workers, and it combines them it both into one, as well as astronomy or astrology, maybe, I don't know.
Astrology? What sign is the
Okay, so maybe not astrology. I don't know.
I bet it's a Sagittarius. Also, during this conversation, I followed 4 different vexillology accounts on Twitter. Because I have the attention span of a gnat.
I think, were we talking about some sort of book or something at some point?
Oh shit, yeah, with the monkey and all that. Yeah, we should probably get back to that, shouldn't we?
Yeah,
I love how you were worried about your long etymological tangent, and I just, and now we're just on, we just had 5 minutes of flags. So
Tripitaka sees giant monster, and does the smart thing, and turns around and tries to run, but he ends up waking up Yellow Robe, who shouts for his minions to grab Tripitaka. And Tripitaka doesn't do well under pressure. He tries to run,
but he's
shaking and his legs have gone numb. He can't run very well, and the imps run him down pretty quickly and drag him back.
Yep.
Tripitaka tries to keep his composure somewhat. He bows respectfully, and the monster sees him, and he thinks he's very handsome, and he must be from... Oh. Some noble country. No, it's not sexual. It's not going that way, I promise.
No monster fucking?
No. He's just remarking on like how well he looks. He must come from a very civilized country. That's what it is.
So no monster fucking, but possible racism.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, I think it's probably, you know, to do with the fact that I think probably more, probably possibly actually more classism, insofar as, you know, you could tell that someone is not a peasant from looking at them. Like, you know, their health, he can tell that he grew up healthy, probably. And so he comes from a comfortable background.
Fed.
Yeah.
Right.
That's my take on it, but like all that it actually says is that he's handsome and therefore he comes from a noble nation.
Well, he's got all those spoils from those light-fingered monks. you know. Sorry, that actually probably was not great a thing to say.
Let's move on! So, he asks Tripitaka where he's from. And Tripitaka explains his pilgrimage and that he's been sent by the Tang Emperor, and kind of emphasizes that he's here on official business from like the Emperor of China, and then he apologizes for disturbing your eminence, and he promises that when he returns to the land of the East, he will be sure that your illustrious name will be recorded gratefully for posterity.
Ah,
So it's actually, I think it's actually fairly shrewd. He's buttering
him up.
He's
being diplomatic.
He's being diplomatic and he's buttering up this Monster King a little bit, but he's also kind of like, I've been sent by the Emperor of China. This is an important mission. The subtext, the subtext there being, if you kill me, it might be a problem for you, and if you let me go, when I get back, I'll put in a good word.
Yeah.
So Yellow Robe robes. Yellow Robe roars with laughter, and says that Tripitaka is indeed someone from a noble country. And he says, you're exactly the kind of person I want to eat.
Oh, great. Thank you, sir.
Not how Tripitaka wanted that sentence to end, I expect.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, surely there are other people he could be eating that aren't some of the Emperor of China, but...
Yellow Robe believes in eating the rich.
Okay, yeah. That's fair. I'll forgive him for the color combination there. But then again, he is sitting in a jewel temple, so I'm not going to go too...
True.
Too far that direction.
So he has Tripitaka tied up, and he asks him who he's traveling with, and Tripitaka tells him about Baji and Wukong. Baji and Wujing. And he says that they're off looking for food.
You useless boy.
So Yellow Robe's minions suggest going looking for them, because Yellow Robe wants to eat them as well, and maybe the horse. But he says not to bother, just shut the door and stand guard, because they'll come looking for Tripitaka eventually and find the place.
Will they? I mean, I know narratively speaking, they kind of have to. But...
So yeah, in the meantime, Wujing eventually does catch up with Baji and finds him after hearing him snoring. He wakes him up and they head back together, or as the book puts it, idiot walked back stupidly with Sha Monk.
He is, well, fair. Fair.
Idiot walked back stupidly.
Do you ever just kind of look at someone and it's just like you, every single little fucking thing about them annoys you? It's like, oh yeah, you're breathing like a fucking moron. It's the most idiot breathing I've ever seen. Fucking go lick a bus handrail, you COVID-denying fuck. Hope you break an arm. Yep. The idiot walked stupidly anyway.
So when they return, they find the horse and the luggage, but no Tripitaka. Wujing immediately concludes he's been captured by a monster again. Baji doesn't think so, though. He thinks this forest is way too lovely to harbour a monster. Tripitaka's probably just gone for a walk.
Yep, monsters never live in pretty places. Famously, everywhere monsters live are dumps. And famously, Tripitaka, who will fall off his horse at the slightest provocation and is probably afraid of his own shadow, is just would love to wander the woods on his own.
I mean, he did.
Well, yeah.
He did!
He was looking for them, though. I don't think it would be his preference.
So they go look for him anyway. This time, they take the horse and luggage with them rather than leaving them unguarded. And they search for a while with no luck before eventually they see beams of golden light coming from the south and head towards it. And they see the golden pagoda, and Baji thinks it must be a good place. Tripitaka is already there getting fed and getting a great reception. Again, Wujing isn't so sure about that. He thinks the place may not be safe, and he says they should have a look around first. And they see there's a sign across the top of the door made of a slab of jade. And it says, Casserole Mountain, Current Moon Cave. And Wujing concludes that this isn't a monastery, it's a monster's den. I'm not exactly sure what part of Casserole Mountain, Current Moon Cave made him conclude it's a monster's den, but he does.
Casserole?
Casserole, as in food.
I'm going to go with casserole.
But it's casserole, as in the type of food. That's the word. Yeah.
That's that would be the one that raised my eyebrows.
Oh, that's why you think it's a monster?
Yep.
Okay.
They're eating people. So this is a hunting ground.
Hmm.
Smart.
So Baji says he'll question them, and he shouts in the door to open up. And a little fiend, I've been saying like imp and minion and this kind of thing. The term that Anthony Yu actually uses constantly is little fiend. To establish that, I guess.
I don't know. I think imp is better. Little fiend sounds quite cute.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using imp because I feel like it gets across the same ideas as little fiend while being a bit less of a weird sounding term.
I don't know. Between that and the walked back idiotly, or walked back stupidly, do you think maybe you was just having an off day?
The little fiend thing is shows up in a lot of chapters. It's just kind of the general term that's used for all the various monsters, minions throughout the book.
Okay, fair.
So the little fiend reports to Yellow Robe that there's two strange looking monks outside banging on the door. So he picks up his scimitar, dons his gold cuirass, silk sash, and belt inlaid with ribbed shells, and he heads out to greet them. So we got some more monster fashion.
He's a bit, you know what? Maybe when it's that over the top, maybe committing to it would make it work.
Yeah, I like the seashell belt.
Yeah, I mean, maybe go big or go home. If it's like a yellow robe that you're trying to make tasteful, no. But if you're going all out,
like a solid gold armor.
Yeah, I have more respect for them now.
So Baoji demands that Yellow Robe send out Tripitaka, but he responds that he's treating the Tong monk as a guest. Right now, he's preparing some lovely buns filled with human flesh for him, and he invites Baji to come in and enjoy them too. And on mention of eating, Baji just kind of instinctively starts walking towards the door until Wu Jing reminds him that Wu Jing has to remind him he's not meant to eat humans anymore.
Anymore! Great! Cool! Is that just something that we've just discovered about him now as well?
No. This is established. It's been established before that Baji and Wu Jing both used to be cannibals.
Well, they're not human though, are they? So it's not really cannibalism if you're gonna poke at it.
Okay. They fair they point. Both,
yeah.
Wu Jing isn't described as any kind of animal. He's just described as having, like, indigo skin. Not really sure what he is.
He's his own thing. He's Wu Jing.
He's Sandy.
Yeah.
He's Sandy the Sand Monk.
Yeah, and I blocked out the human flesh thing anyway. Sorry.
Baji takes a swipe at Yellow Robe with his rake, and the Baji, Yellow Robe, and Wu Jing all start fighting. The three of them fly into the air and start fighting together in the sky. But if you want to know how that fight goes, you'll have to listen to the next chapter.
Cliffhanger.
Okay, I think we did get through that a bit faster than I expected.
Yeah, even with the flags. What's your... Listeners, we want to know your favorite flag. I actually really do. I'm always interested.
Find MJ on Twitter at tshockgotrash and send them flags.
Yeah, send me all the flags. Other social media links and stuff are in show notes, but this is the important... But just remember my Twitter handle and flags. Write it down if you have to. You know, make it be one of those bizarre post-it notes that you find fucking years down the line when you're moving house and go, what the fuck? That's what I want to be. That's all I
want
to be to
anyone. You want to be a post-it note.
I want to be that post-it note that you find, This was going somewhere. I'm sorry. I'm in a weird mood.
Okay.
Yeah.
So So Sun Wukong is still separated from the rest of them. There's no sign of any reunion yet.
Yeah. But it's gonna come back.
Maybe.
We'll have to see. Now I'm worried that he won't. Gonna lose sleep over it.
So I did promise MJ a complete tangent about etymology that has nothing to do with this particular episode.
Yay!
Do you remember ages ago, in like one of the first chapters where Wukong and Tripitaka were together, there was a pun that relied on the fact that Tong is in the Tong Dynasty and sugar are homophones in the language it was written in?
Yes.
So I was curious about that to see was there any etymological relationship between those two. And the answer is... the answer is that the Chinese written language works so much fucking differently to like European phonetic language, like alphabets that it's... I don't know how to really describe this properly. I'm just going to like narrate my little Wiktionary and Wikipedia binge that I went on that I have no like outside context on how this language works otherwise. But there's a character that is pronounced Tong that is used now generally just to mean the Tang Dynasty or poetically for China in general. I went on a few tangents while looking up this character. One is the same characters that are used for written Chinese are used in Japanese, as well as their own alphabets that don't overlap. There's several alphabets that are used. In Japanese, the same character is also used to refer to China in general. And then it was kind of... that meaning was extended to encompass foreign things in general. And it's used as a prefix sometimes on like foreign things. And in that context, it's not pronounced Tong in Japanese. It's the same, you write the same character, but it's pronounced Kara.
Interesting.
And if you've ever had Tori Karaage in a Japanese restaurant, it's that character at the start.
Huh.
And I tried to look up more specific etymological information on the like Tori Karaage or Karaage as a term to see does it actually then just translate to as Chinese fried chicken. but I didn't find any like definitive like thing in English. Like I did a very, very brief like Googling of this and I didn't find anything in English that had any kind of definitive answer on that. But I like to think it does.
Okay.
And I just found that interesting. But then that was one sidetrack. But then there's the relationship between the Tong and sugar. And so there's this thing that I did not know about that I learned from reading, you know, like a Wikipedia article yesterday, where there's things in Chinese called phonetic series, which is a series of characters made up of a compound of a phonetic character and a semantic character. So you can look at it and know it's pronounced a certain way from the phonetic character, and it also has a meaning related to whatever the semantic character is. So The Tong that's used for Tong Dynasty is the kind of bare phonetic character. So anything that contains that character you know is pronounced Tong. And so the word for sugar is that character plus the semantic character mi, which means grains of rice. And apparently it originally meant, according to Wiktionary, sweet rice cakes, and then it took on the meaning of sweets in general and then sugar in general.
Okay.
So I can't really say if that like counts as an etymological relationship or not, because it's like... a compound word where you have this character that has like an almost like separate, you know, in English and Irish, in languages we'd be more familiar with, the letters that you write are entirely phonetic, more or less. There might be things, you know, there might be weird etymological reasons for certain spellings that are holdovers that you wouldn't quite pronounce them as they expect. But in this case, it's like you have these characters who have completely separate kind of phonetic and semantic components that are wedged together into one compound character. So I don't really know how to, and the, you know, the Wiktionary isn't extremely extensive on that. And when I was trying to Google like the characters in general with more etymological information, I was just getting results that were web pages in Chinese, so I couldn't read them. But that was interesting. And the last little tangent was one of the things I saw on the Wiktionary entry is a term in modern Chinese, and I guess Chinese is weird because it's like, it's not really, Chinese is a written language, and then there's Mandarin versus Cantonese and other like different spoken languages that use the same written language. And so I guess the pronunciation that's given is presumably the Mandarin pronunciation, but there's a term, Shi Tong, which probably not getting quite right either, but literally means eating sweets. But is also slang for taking hormones.
Mm.
So if you
okay.
So if you want to be trans in Chinese, there's a term for you.
Now we know.
Yeah. That was my random Wiktionary binge that I just wanted to dump on people.
I am delighted I was here for it. Awesome. Yay.
Yep. Tune in for the next episode to find out if Sun Wukong will rejoin the pilgrimage or more random rambling explanations of shit I read on Wikipedia yesterday about a language I know nothing about.
And maybe flags. Maybe that too. Maybe eating sweets while talking about flags. Should get into flags.
Is this it? Bye. Please join us for our new podcast. Please join us for our new podcast, Journey of the Vexologist. Bye.
Bye.